we can start. Although we just... Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the second meeting for the informal hearings. We don't have a quorum, but I think we should start because we are just having discussions at this stage, not at the point of making decisions. We've got one apology. Excuse me, for Mr. van der Werf. Any other apologies? Only one. So people might stream in a little later. I know Intiki is coming a little bit late. She's just got some errands to run to with regards to a child's schooling. That she'll be here just now. And I don't know about the other members. I'm sure they'll walk in. Good one. You can't accept. All right. Last week, when we had some discussion, we did say that the department should do some initial drafting for us with regards to the object of the act that comes on page 4. And then also we wanted some clarity on the company, the old Companies Act, the new Companies Act, in relation to Section 26 and 27 of the bill. Maybe we should start there and just get an update on what has happened so far and some report. We've asked for copies of the act. Now, it's such a fat act, you know, you think it's a fat act. It's intimidating now to get a document like this. But you'll help us through it. Have you seen this, Eric? These are this is the old Companies Act and the new Companies Act. I can see you're not a businessman. You don't understand anything about company law. But anyway, it was made available. It was in my office. I don't know who brought it, but it had been circulated to all the members. Okay, so maybe we should start there, and then we stopped once we completed with that, then we will go back to page 5, because that's where we stopped on chapter 3. So can I welcome then the team from the DOC, legal people, and I see people from the post office are here with the legal team. Did I see the chief executive officer somewhere? Yes, and the chairperson of the post office. Welcome to both of you. Is anybody else I need to recognize from the officials? No. Okay, fine. So welcome to all of you, and then can we hand over to the department's legal team?
Okay, thank you, Chair. I wish to send an apology for Minister and also the DG, who are busy preparing, as you know, for the budget vote, which we also have to be joining the team around the final preps, doing the final touch-up. Thank you. The team has tried all its best. But also, I'd like to get members also to have access to the document that has been printed by the British government, in particular on the post ban. So it's a good reading for the post office to read what has been issued on March around the post ban. The issues that they raised are similar to our issues. So we are indeed following the right direction. We probably actually would have been in the British government had we implemented this part of the deal almost 30 years ago. So I would actually urge for the speedy process of the deal, so that we are able to grow the bank at the speed that we share our people require. And by now, we'll probably be talking about ownership of the bank by rural people, buying serious shares around ownership of the bank, actually, to follow the Grameen bank that the member did propose some other time. The team, I think, introduce itself quickly for those that don't know who they are.
Our host, Director Legal, DOC.
Willie Ugela, Director, Policy Development, DOC.
Dominique, Sustainable Advisor.
Serato Munete, Director Legal, DOC.
Thank you, Chair. I think most people know me. I'm an excellent member of the
of the committee.
No, I'm keeping to tell you, I think there is a general, there is a general on ICT policy development. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Mr. Vukela, are you going to take us through this proposal?
Because that section says this instance where a new act, the Companies Act of 2008, repeals a similar act, the Companies Act of 73, then a reference, such as in the Postbank Bill, to a provision in the 73 Companies Act will be regarded as a reference to a similar provision in the new Act, the Companies Act of 2008. The point is, by the time the 2008 Companies Act comes into operation, it's not a problem because the Interpretation Act will ensure that it's catered for, despite the fact that our bill still has a reference to the Companies Act of 73. Having said that, we therefore only have to make reference to the 73 Companies Act, and then we considered a couple of options, and it's really those three listed on the document in front of honorable members. The first option, we just argue that we still believe the current wording in clauses 26 and 7 are in order. In fact, they seem to be best practice. We've listed there a number of different statutes that have exactly those same provisions. So it seems to be the accepted practice to draft it in that way, and I think at the end of the day we would still support the wording as is. Just by way of reference, we added a second option after seeing the wording in the Public Investment Corporation Act, which takes it even a bit further. You'll recall the current clause says that the post office must motivate, or the post bank must motivate which section shouldn't apply. You then send it to the DTI. They have to go through a public consultation process, get submissions in, and then they have to be satisfied that really nobody would be prejudiced, etc. Option two, you'll see in sub B, it actually leaves that power just to our minister. The minister declared a particular provision not to be applicable to the company. So that's an even easier way of doing it, but I'm just including it by way of example, but I doubt whether this kind of provision will be accepted. Then option three was sort of a hybrid between the two. We thought that let's take clause 27 out then and only reword 26 to then say a provision of the Companies Act doesn't apply to the company if, because of any special or contrary arrangement made by this Act, such a provision is clearly inappropriate or inapplicable of being applied. But then we add the following specific provisions of the Companies Act do not apply to the company. Now, in all fairness to the post office, we had informal discussions with the executive of legal just to get an idea of which sections shouldn't apply. We haven't had a formal response, but at least we got an indication of at least three sections that their external lawyers believe wouldn't be applicable. I'd rather leave that to the post office, the executive legal, to explain which sections they think shouldn't apply should the committee opt to go for this option. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Before, just for myself, I mean, I must tell you I'm at a complete loss here. What are we trying to deal with? Before we consider options, what's the problem in the Companies Act that we can't have the whole Act to apply to both? If someone can just explain that to us, maybe the post office people should explain that to us.
One of the provisions which is a concern is Section 66 and a few other provisions in the Companies Act that require that a public company should have more than, I think it's 5 members, if not 7. In this instance, it's going to be a company that only has 1 member. And therefore, if it goes through to the company's office to be registered as a public company, the register will not be in a position to register that company because of that particular provision. And there are also restrictions as to the register of companies registering a bank. And again, we are also trying to deal with that particular provision. So it is actually very specific provisions that we can submit in writing given time to the portfolio committee. I'm actually working through those. I will have them shortly. And thank you, Chair. If you can also look at this bunch, there's a few sections that I may assist with also. Like in section 32 of the current one, the Bank Companies Act, the reason why section 32 cannot apply, as the honourable colleague said, there is because of the number, because it requires 7 members, and then the state is a state-owned company, so only one member, which is the minister. There's a section 44 also of the 73 Act, which refers to the name change by special resolution. That cannot happen in the case of the Post Bank because it's established in terms of legislation, so it cannot be, the name of the Post Bank cannot just be changed by special resolution. Section 44.
There's
the section 54 also, which says memorandum shall be completed in the preferred form and must be signed by not less 7 members or subscribers. Still, it applies to the membership of the company because it's a state-owned company. Only the minister signs the memorandum in terms of our bill. There's section 60, which says the articles must be signed by the each subscriber giving a number more than one. It also still boils down to the question of the membership of the company. It's a state-owned company, so it cannot be applied also to the person.
Which section is that?
It's section 60. There's also section 63. Which refers to the prescribed fee which must be paid, which is also not going to be applicable to our bill, because it has been covered in terms of first clause 3, how the registration is going to be complied with when it refers to the postman. So it is not relevant also to the case of the postman. There's section 64. Which says the certificate of incorporation given by the registrar in respect of the company must be by mere production, the conclusive proof. There's also the bill provides for procedures of registration, so they're going to take precedence over the Companies Act given the structure of the post bill, post bank bill. There's section 65 also. It says from the date of incorporation stated in the certificate, subscribers of the memorandum together with such other persons, referring also to the numbers, shall be a body corporate with the name stated in the memorandum. Still, it's only the minister is responsible for that because it's only a state-owned company. Section 66 also refers to the membership of the company and subsidiaries. It also still applies to the minister. The certificate to commence business, which is dealt with section 172 of the Companies Act. No company having a share capital shall commence business or exercise any borrowing powers unless registered under the provision of this section, issued under intent the sealed certificate entitling the company to commence business. This is contrary to the registration process, which is contained in the bill, because we're not subjecting the government to the authority of the registrar. So this section is not applicable also. Section 172. And the commencement of business is dealt with also in clause 3 of the bill. So it's not subject to section 172 of the Companies Act. So this provision is also not appropriate given the structure of the post bank. Section 190 relating to the quorum in meetings. This section 190 in the Companies Act applies to members, which meaning shareholders, which number of shareholders must be present. Also, when it's the minister who is the shareholder in this one, so this is not applicable in our case.
And then there's the last one, section 344, circumstances in which the company may be owed up by court. If section 344B, the company may be owed up by court if the company commenced business before the register certified that it was entitled to commence business. In this case, we do not need the certificate of the register because of the registration process contained in clauses 3 and 4. So, therefore, this is not applicable to the postman. The same applies also to section 344D. In the case of a company may be wound up by the court if, in the case of a private company, the number of members has been reduced to below 7. We already have one member, so there's no chance where a membership of the postman may be reduced to under 7. So those are the types of sections that may are not generally by their nature are not applicable to the postman.
Thank you very much for the homework you have done. I mean, from what I can sense, these are really procedural issues. They're not deal with substantive powers of anybody. And they are only aimed at dealing with the size of the shareholder, the number of shareholders. That's really what we're trying to do. I think the anxiety or the fear the last time was that the minister might take more power than is desirable, etc. Now, I don't know if it's good practice to start listing all these things, or should we just go for a broad sort of omnibus clause that encapsulates everything? That's really what I think the current wording is about. That's option one. All right, let's put it up for some discussion and comment. We're still trying to digest. Let's kill it. You came late. I know you're not going to help us, but say something.
I believe the question came up when we were dealing with the first couple of clauses of the bill. Then we relate it to the clauses at the back of the book. My suggestion would be that we revert back to where we stopped amongst the first couple of sections. Revert back. We know now what it's referred to here, and we can then deal and progress in the same format that we started last week, moving on from 5-7, you know, to work through and get the necessary explanations wherever we need. So do you regard that as not being helpful?
That's the best suggestion I've heard in years.
Professor, I just want to understand, if you look at option 3, where you speak about the non-application of provisions of the Companies Act. Assuming that we accept that, and that you then list in the new bill all the clauses not applicable to the Post Bank, are we then not creating in a Post Bank Act, instead of the Companies Act, another level of banking? Because what I see that this level of banking needs to be created within the Companies Act and not in the Post Bank bill that we are dealing with now. I remember correctly the Treasury last time explained about the two levels of banking, and that this kind of bank that we are trying to create now is not in the Companies Act, and that they will at a later date look at amending the Companies Act to create this kind of level of banking, and a level of tier of banking. So I'm just concerned that instead of amending the Companies Act to make provision for the kind of bank that we want to create, we now want to go ahead and change the Companies Act through a post-bank bill. I don't know if I understand this correctly, Jefferson.
Okay, let me clarify, because we did discuss this from last week. What is becoming clear is that the legal people explained to us that ordinarily if you want to open a bank, you must follow three steps. One is to, the first is before you even register a company, you must get permission from the registrar of banks to say, I want to open a bank. You must say, yes, I give you permission to open a bank.
Yes.
Two, you must then establish a company in terms of the Companies Act. And once you got that, you must then apply for a registration certificate to run a bank, which the registrar of banks will give you in terms of the Banks Act. In this case, because the Post Bank is already an operational bank and it's already a company in existence under the post office, it doesn't have to take the first step of telling the registrar, I want to open a bank, because it's already in existence. Yeah. But if we want to establish a fully fledged bank, we must establish a company. In terms of the Companies Act, that's what we're doing now through this legislation. Having established this company, then they will formally apply for registration, and the registrar of banks will stipulate the conditions and the terms on which this bank can be, and the category of the bank, in terms of the Banks Act and the second-tier bank, etc. He or she, whoever the registrar is, will stipulate the conditions. So what we're doing now is we're establishing a company, a fully-fledged company in terms of the Companies Act. And the discussion that emerged from because of the question that Lindy raised last week is why do we want certain provisions of the Companies Act not to apply in this company? And that's the explanation that we are giving, given that it's really in the Companies Act, the shareholder is more than one that is listed in all of those clauses from what I can understand now. And in this case, the only shareholder is the minister, which is one person. So you can't make those clauses applicable to this company. That's where we are.
But we just said that there is going to be possible shareholding by people from the rural area will be allowed to buy shares. I think the first response was that. Now, how can the minister still be the only shareholder if we are going to allow the rural people to buy shares?
All right. No, I mean, there's been no suggestion at this stage or at any stage that there'll be public shares in this company. This is a state bank. I mean, the post office bank, it's a government bank that we are establishing. So the only shareholder is the minister on behalf of the government.
I understand that. I didn't make that up. It was said
Oh, okay.
By
so, all right, let those who cooked up the story then.
If they were trying to please me, then I was very happy about that. And now I'm sitting and I see, but be back to the minister.
No. Yeah, thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honorable Member Dili. I think what I was explaining is that had we started the bank effecting the bill 12 years ago, because it's 12 years old, the concept of this bill, would have by now been making this, being actually at a different phase of it around its ownership and control. Yeah, this is what I was trying to explain. Now that we are extremely late, and it's not yet even on cards that we would open shareholding and control to rural people. We need them to speed up the process of starting from now to effect the bill as is proposed, so that in the near future, if we happen to be successful, so that when the bank grows, we can then give shareholding to rural people and all. That will be maybe 20 years later, 25 years later. That's what I was trying to give. It's a scenario, it's not a position. It's not a proposal that is on the bill. It is a scenario trying to refer back. Had we started 12 years ago, who would have been there?
That's exactly my concern. But if you have the intention of, in future, allowing for shareholding of rural people in the bank, then the bill must make provision for it now. It can't wait for 20 years to first see if it's going to be successful, then you're no different from a normal commercial bank. You know, because the commercial bank will go up and go and list the company, and then people can buy shares. You're no different from that.
No, Chair. I understand the argument is very progressive and it's tempting. But I think the issue, Chair, is that indeed any legislation or policy is subject to review at a certain point. I'm sure ourselves, as we conduct the oversight, we should be able at one point to suggest to move towards that direction. And the honourable members are aware that the committee also has power to initiate amendment to legislation and so on. If at that point our assessment is that we've reached a point which says now we must move towards that second layer of ownership and so on, I think we can be able to do that. But the issue, Chair, which I wanted also to talk to, I think we must say that I think we are battling with the issue which is on the 23rd when the National Treasury was presenting, talk about the dedicated bank, which is the second tier. I think that's where the issue we're battling with, that whether the act as it's currently say in that provision, does it talk to that second tier or dedicated bank, or just an open bank? I think it's a matter which technically we need to be able to deal with, which I think at one point maybe the legal people must ask us. Whether the clause as it stands now, does it talk to the dedicated bank as presented by National Treasury on the 23rd, or is that an open bank? But it's a matter which is a technical matter we can come back, and I don't think that we can make it with now because we can just go and continue. The other clauses will come back later to talk on that particular matter, like when we go to the formal deliberation and so on. But I think that's where the crux of the matter is, whether as it stands, just talk to the dedicated bank, the second tier, or is that talking about the general bank with the understanding that we know at the back of our mind that the level of participation of both banks will be at that particular level.
I just indicate the National Treasury has sent a message. They want to make some submissions to us. It's coming at, they said, at about 10 o'clock, so we're waiting for whatever documentation they will put before us. And let's engage on that issue now. But if my memory serves me right, what the officials from the National Treasury said, that the dedicated banks, that bill has not been developed as yet. Am I right in that? There's the idea to move in that direction. They're doing some work, but there's no legislation on the table. So we can't preempt that something might be coming in current law. That's the problem that we're faced with here. All right, Mr. Bukela, I see you wanted to say something.
Thanks, Chair. Though my submission has been overtaken by the submission made by Honorable Colonel, perhaps to respond to the fears that Member Khan is raising is the fact that on the day in question when Treasurer was here, they made a very loud statement that they take ownership of this bill because they're part of the process. So if the very same ministry supports this process, knowing very well that this bill contradicts the spirit of the visioning they had Post Bank, I think it's going to be a problem. But as I'm saying, Chairperson, Post Bank, I mean, Treasury is part of the process. The language that Treasury is speaking, the language that DOC is speaking, the language that Post is speaking. So we are on the same length and breadth, honorable members. So we can talk on technical matters that what is presented here is a product of the intra committee that was established in 2005. Thank you, Chairperson.
All right, can we then move off this? We've got the three options. I think when we come to, as was suggested, very wisely suggested by the Honorable Julian, when we come to clauses 26 and 27, we can then explore this in greater detail. All right, can we then move to Chapter 3, Powers and Duties of the Company, page 5. Anything of concern? Are we comfortable with that here? It's to manage the assets and transfer of assets, am I right? All right. Two operational issues. Is there Hannah? Patricia?
Stephenson, thank you. I just want to establish in terms of powers and duties of this company, how different is it from any other state-owned enterprise? Is there a difference between the powers and duties of any other state-owned enterprise? What you are suggesting in section 9, I mean clause 9. I'm not familiar with what is the powers and duties of state-owned companies. Do they differ from company to company? And is this specifically designed for the bank?
Go ahead. I'm sorry, I don't know your name. I didn't get it.
Mandiza. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to clarify for the Honorable Member that to the extent that a state-owned enterprise is a creature of statute, its powers are limited to what is set out in the statute. To the extent that the state-owned enterprise is not a creature of statute, then it is limited by what is in the Companies Act and what is set out in its articles and memorandum of association. In terms of the bank, much as the company that currently is being created is intended to be a bank, the full power of the bank will be what will be appearing in the license of the bank when the bank becomes licensed.
Can I just check clause 9.2? It says the company, that is the post bank, and the post office must, with the concurrence of the minister and the minister of finance. Now, the minister is the minister for both companies, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And the minister of finance conclude an agreement which governs cooperation between the company and the post office. Is that in order?
Yes.
Because in the one instance, you're talking of the same person. But the idea is really in this minister that covers both companies must enter into an agreement with the Minister of Finance. Is that what this clause means? Yes? No? No, I don't want to shake heads, you see, because when you come to a court of law, you can't say, the officials were sitting here and they were making a list. Then I don't know if it's a Bulgarian knot or some other knot.
Okay, well, the only thing it says is an agreement must be entered into between the post bank and the post office. But that agreement is also subject to approval by the Minister of Communications and the Minister of Finance. So they can't go and just conclude it on their own and it's valid. It's still subject to a concurrence or approval of both these ministers.
No, I understand that part. I understand the second part. The first part is the minister must enter into an agreement with himself, because he's the shareholder for both those companies. Isn't that, I mean, that's what it means?
Well, Chair, the thing is, this is an operational matter which is far removed from the shareholder being the shareholder, so it's not the shareholder as such that's a party to that agreement. It's merely the shareholder approving it. Chair.
Okay.
Maybe explain in English. if you can explain in English, when does the minister become the shareholder? When does he remove himself being a shareholder, become an operational matter in Arabic? Because I think that's where the problem is. There's different roles. If you explain it in English, maybe we'll hear.
Yeah.
But I think that's a very difficult question to answer, but it's important to know it because it happens on broadcasting. Take the SABC. The minister is the shareholder of the SABC, but he's also a policymaker in broadcasting. So those issues should be
taken cognizance of. So it will be difficult now to try and clarify in this thing when does his power start, when does it end. But here it explains his role in terms of the concurrence on the judicial decision around the management of these kinds of businesses of the state. And then that's why the bill will have them to go through to treasure before it gets approved. You know. It's also a check and balance if you can look at it. So that there's no monopoly of one minister against the whole post and business. There's coherence, you know, because there's money issues involved. And treasurer will actually be the one that takes off the debt, because they don't have necessarily capital except in the coffers of the state revenue as a base.
Sorry, Chair, as I understand it, the minister is the shareholder in the post office and the sole member in the post office. And in clause 3.2, the post office is the sole member and shareholder of the company, of this company. The post office, which is the sole, yes, effectively, which is the minister. So now we are saying the post office must enter into the company, and the post office must enter into a cooperation agreement. Okay. Which means the post office, being the sole member and shareholder, must enter into an agreement with itself.
Well, see, to me, the shareholding issue is not relevant in an operational matter. I see this as an operational matter that says how are these two new companies, or one existing now going forward, going to share their facilities, because the post bank happens to be in the post office. And because these are SOEs, and that has a significant impact possibly on state assets, there's a role for a minister that plays an oversight role over these SOEs, and therefore it requires approval at that level from the minister and the Minister of Finance as well. I personally don't see the big issue with shareholding as such.
Can I, if you allow me, I'm just not sure I should say anything, but I agree with the previous speaker, honourable members. We this pulls from the current memorandum of understanding between the post office, the Department of Communication and Treasury. And actually, it's a very critical clause, because even it stipulates, even in the process of restructuring, I'm not sure about it, the exact clause, that we need to sit around the table and agree on that. And it's a very critical, I mean, even during this process, we've been using that clause to ensure that between the post office, the Department of Communication and Treasury, we are together in the approach, and the consensus in the mechanisms in terms of the operation, even during the transitional phase. So I do believe that this is very critical. And actually, it is not just an issue of shareholding. It is actually in terms of the voice and the cooperation of the critical parties in terms of this. So I'm just saying that it is based on current practice, and it is critical for future.
No, I understand the explanation. But you see, maybe there is a better way of rephrasing to it. I don't know. But I'm saying things, it will be difficult. We understand the reason. But it does not make sense. When you see, the issues, we must pass the law, we must understand it. But as it is now, you might understand the operational drills we are dealing with at next. But if you are called to interpret it on your own and say, but what does it mean exactly? That's what the problem is. I'm not sure whether there's another way of putting two points, because it just, you see, if you don't understand that thing, if you are dealing with it, becomes a problem. But because I understand the motivation, it's good, want to maintain it, but there's no other way of rephrasing in a different manner, which maybe will be more understandable. Because Chair, I must also indicate that one of our witnesses, if you read the assessment of Parliament, by those panels and so on, is to make laws with laws which are not understanding. Because this law is for the public must be able to interact with the legislation. So if you write it in this manner, it's making it difficult to the public to engage in terms of understanding the law itself. So we're also required to make law using simple English and simple language so that people can be able to follow.
Okay, can we get the legal people to suggest an alternative drafting? We agree with the principle and the clause, but it's a question of how we can clarify what it actually means. Okay? Can we move up? Section 10 now? Oh, sorry. Okay.
I think there was an explanation that this has happened in other fields. Now, this simple English we are talking about, how simple must it be from what is written here? The company and the post office must, with concurrence with the other simple rules that we've been following. Some of the things that I think we are, I don't understand. I don't think I have to read this. I think this is quite experimental.
Patricia?
Jefferson, I'm just seeking clarity because, you know, the last thing that I would like to see is that we take out all a number of provisions of the Companies Act that will not apply to this bill, but then we put it back in the powers and duties of the company. And you know, I will go and do my own homework and see what is put back here. But I would like to understand what do you mean in clause 9.1b where it says manage, insure, sell, lease, mortgage, dispose of, give in exchange. What do you envisage with that? And then can I just finish the second question? You will also have the power to raise fund. Where do you see you raise that fund from? And then the one that's really concerning me is that if conclude joint ventures and other commercial agreements with third parties in order to promote and advance its business. Now, I just see that there's something bigger that's going to develop here. We're going to establish a company with the intent of then going into joint ventures, going into other commercial agreements. Are we going to compete with the commercial banks? That's why this powers and duties, Chairperson, it's not just something to gloss over. Because we've just been told what the Companies Act is not going to be applicable, but my sense is that a lot of the things that we are setting out will be putting back into this act. And therefore, I would actually like to hear them go through this 9.1 and explain to us. A is quite clear, some things in B. They must explain to us what do they envisage with this in the bill. Or is it the role of the Treasury to give us what the powers and duties of this company will be?
All right, so you're going to help us here?
Chair, let me try. I think when the Post Office and the State Law Advisor dealt with which sections do not apply in the Companies Act, none of those were about powers of the company and those kinds of things. As Chair, you correctly pointed out, it relates to the fact that this is a public company. The Companies Act requires that a public company should at least have 7 members. And because of that provision, the whole Companies Act is interspersed with those kinds of provisions, similar provisions. Now you want to exclude some of those because in the case of the Post Bank, you only have 1 member or shareholder being the Post Office. Which then says to me, so that's not the concern. If we, this is also linked to the previous question that was raised, and is there a sort of a standard set of powers for SOEs? I'm not aware of any template or standard set of powers and duties of SOEs. It must depend on the circumstances, I think. But at the same time, if one would go and search for similar provisions in other statutes, you'd find that many of these powers are similar. I think going into the detail of each word and trying to say, but let's apply that to the post bank, will it ever exchange something, or will it ever conclude a joint venture, would be unfair, because you're creating a company and you need to give it some powers. And these powers are typical powers required for any company to perform its functions and business and carry on day-to-day operations of a company. So I think that, you know, without identifying a specific section here that's wrong or right, I think generally these apply to SOEs and a company needs to operate. Thank you.
Except, Chairperson, that I want some explanation, you know, because I'm not familiar with the other companies that these things are normally included. And I think we can ask to explain what does it mean to say give and exchange, what does it mean to raise funds, what does it mean to enter into joint ventures and other commercial agreements for us to understand. I think you must also accept it's the first time that we are trying to do legislation this way, where you have to deal with both the Companies Act and the Post Office Bill. I'm merely asking explanation 91B, 9D, and 9F.
And this, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think just to explain the reasoning behind the drafting, initially there was a debate whether this particular section should end after the first two sentences, where we actually explained that the company will have the powers to enable it to realize the objects referred to in Section 2. It was possible to do it like that. And in fact, the inclusion of what then comes doesn't actually take away from the fact that that is the main object. The inclusion of setting out A to G was to illustrate what those powers include. The reasoning behind raising funds is the fact that banks are able to issue bonds and use other instruments of raising funds. And in as far as subsection F is concerned, the PFMA, which is applicable to the post bank as it stands, actually excludes the ability to enter into joint ventures without going through certain specific steps. However, in the interest of an agility in the bank, we thought it would be prudent to actually give this bank the power to be able to do what may be necessary in a short space of time. That was the rationale for the drafting as it stands.
But lady.
Okay, just to support my colleague saying, most of the issues that the member is raising are implied in Chapter 2. And even how the business is going to be transferred. And then implying that there have been business that have been running on, there have been mortgages that have been dealt with, there have been exchanges, there have been buildings that are there, there have been assets that are there. There's already those that are rented in the future. There will be issues of exchange. There will be quite a number of business operations that banks usually engage in. There will be a collateral agreement for sure with another small bank on a particular account, where maybe the post bank doesn't have a building there. They may share with Standard Bank and say this counter will be used for post bank. It is part of the business that has been banking at a rate that is quite reasonable. I mean, there would be a number of ventures. That okay. There will be diversification, not investment in other areas in order to raise money for the bank. That's the reason why treasury is directly involved, because you don't have a huge venture capitalist. The state becomes the venture capitalist to secure and guarantee the existence of the bank. So some of those business issues are normal business practice issues in banking, which we cannot deny. Otherwise, we'll stifle the bank. It's not going to grow. Okay. It's going to be just recycling money without any growth. Not without only even investing anywhere else. It's just recycling money. It's just an institution that has become a long-term liability for the taxpayers without even sustaining itself for the growth and trying to diversify resources or to develop what it is that to do. So this is what I'm trying to put in a layman language. What do you mean by those other issues?
Thank you, sir. Just to add to what Mr. Mutulis has just said, I think it must also be taken into account that no matter what powers and duties are granted to the jurisdiction, as a state-owned entity, it is also subject to the Public Finance Management Act. So if it's going to exercise any powers that exceed the Public Finance Management Act, it's going to be improper. So in answering your question, all these powers and duties are subject to other legislation that is also applicable to the jurisdiction. I hope that has answered. Thank you,
Chair. Okay. I think Honourable DeLaw shares the same concern as I share. Here we're creating an animal that is going to be a bank, and if I understand Mr. Butlevi correctly, and Mandisa, who spoke before him, originally it was envisaged that we would stop off in 9-1 and A and B, but now the wording was used in order to provide agility for the bank, for the board. It is being expanded. Now, if I listen carefully to what Mr. Butlevi said, we have, as I can see it, a risk, a potential risk, that people who would not have the backing of the state and the public and public money would be more circumspect with the type of risk that they would venture into. Here, the comfort of the backing by the taxpayer could be a potential risk. And why I'm saying that is, if they have to go through other procedures which would give them less agility, it would secure the money of the people who invest with the bank better. Yes, in the end, the state can bail out a bank if there were some decisions taken that actually exposed the bank to risks, etc. And the people will eventually not lose that money, but they will lose other money, because in the end, the state determines certain priorities, and whatever you steal from Peter to pay Paul, it means somewhere else people will lose out in terms of financial services by government, taxpayers' money. You see what I mean? I'm saying if, for instance, the health sector is being run at a loss, then some money must be taken away from education to help fund the loss in the health sector. And the same will happen here. My question would therefore be, if it's a company and it would not be as agile as it is when we give it all these powers, but we limit the powers, it will not stop the bank from doing what it should do. It still has the powers in terms of the Companies Act to operate the company and to work wisely. I hear that the issue of the PSMA, but I must still see the effects of the PSMA really in the public sector. So far, you can just attend the Public Accounts Committee year after year after year. It's a repetition by all the departments of all the systemic failures that we've had in every department. Nothing really happens, despite the PSMA being there in place. So that in itself is not going to make me feel more comfortable. The issue that I have here is to say, should we not perhaps move wisely and say, let us stop at certain powers and not give it all the powers right at once, because there is a potential risk also for the state to lose money. Thank you.
Colony?
Chair, maybe. I think the issues raised here are important to a certain extent, but you see, Chair, if you have been dealing with the public entities, part of the issues I was raising initially is that I think we must move away from the mentality. We seek to say people in the public servant or public entities, they don't have the ability which the private sector has in terms of running this company. I think that's one thing. The second thing is that the experience is that even this concurrence by the minister to certain decisions, if you want to literally deal with that matter, is that it also limits and frustrates the state-owned entities in terms of taking the turnaround time for public entities to take decisions. I will tell you why. By the time Post Bank wants to venture in a certain business and so on, once that is known, the private companies will be able to turn around that time within a few weeks, but they still will have the concurrence of ministers. That's why I was raising 2.8. So, because you see, so we must allow them. We must allow them to flourish, to take decisions, the turnaround to be quick, so that they are able to do that. But currently, I'm not dismissing what they are raising, but I'm saying the approach should be that we must allow them to do their business, and they are able to take decisions timely, like any other company, and be held accountable in terms of their decision. But the issue of PFMA, I think it's a matter which needs to be looked at, but I don't think this committee can be able to deal with it. But I think if there is a deficiency in the PFMA, it's a matter which needs to deal with the normal processes of amending legislation in some way, and the other committees is responsible. Now we cannot be able to deal with the case of PFMA. But I'm saying, Chair, I think at one point you must rethink what is my colleagues are raising in a manner that, for me, public entities, they are unable to do what they're supposed to do, because the frustration is that your strategic plan, your everything must be subjected to ministers. Concurrency takes their own time to come back to them to implement. By the time you implement, you're overtaken by events. So maybe we need a change of heart around that, but put built in the necessary protection, that whatever decision is in line with the shareholding or articles of association and other things, but this limitation begins to be have a negative impact to the our own companies is supposed to run a negative impact. So I think here we continue to limit them in terms of this clause, which is giving the comfort which my colleagues are raising in terms of saying there will be concurrence in certain of these issues. That limit them and give that comfort. But my argument, I will argue further that even that limitation needs to be limited where concurrence is needed. There are certain issues where they need to run so that they're able to do business like any other company.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think with 9.2, the problem is not the principle as it says, but the word conclude an agreement, because with an agreement one anticipates, you know, what if there's a failure, who is then responsible, what are the consequences of the breach. I think what we're trying to say here is perhaps for the minister in consultation or after consultation or what's the word in here with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance to please try to rules of cooperation as opposed to conclude an agreement. That is just my proposal. But then the other consequence of provisions such as this is it has also going to the Post Office Act, because as it is there will be three pieces of legislation relating to the Post Office Act, and this is not in there. There's not a correlating provision.
All right. From what I understand the discussion to mean is that, look, we must mitigate against risk. Is that right word? But we mustn't also choke the company to death. And we need to strike a balance between the two. So when we are dealing with this clause, I mean, let's see, are there any specific risks that we want to narrow down or we consider? Let's specify those. then we can decide whether we should delete them at this stage or not delete them. But we must accept that this thing must thrive. I mean, it's not a normal public entity. It's a bank competing with other private sector banks, and I think we must give it that flexibility. Okay. Now, is there any specific clauses, A, B, C, whatever it is, still G, that we are concerned about, that we think we're giving it too much of power? Let's flag that if you want to. Otherwise, we must accept the clause as is. Want to come in?
I was actually thinking about the issue of the joint venture, but I also understand that it is, for instance, necessary to have the right to enter into a joint venture. So, say for instance, facilities-wise, the bank would not have, there's no post office in somewhere other little Makuku village somewhere. Then it means that the post bank should be in a position to enter into an agreement with some other bank that is currently there. That is basically the joint venture that is under this. So I think it would be also wrong to totally remove it. Otherwise, you are going to stifle the business. My question, though, is that not normal practice for companies? Is it not described in the Companies Act? Is it necessary to stipulate it here? And if we stipulate the powers and duties of the company, do we restrict it to these powers and companies? And all other powers and duties of a company as prescribed in the Companies Act is not applicable. So is it only going to be restricted to these? Thank you, Chair. I think the word that...
Since when you begin, Mrs. Bukela? I thought something was concluded in the last 5 minutes here.
Oh, no.
Through these joint ventures...
No. I hope the fact that he spoke after I said Bukela is because we've been together within this process from the beginning.
I see. Oh.
So what I'm going to say is going to say the same thing. Okay, thanks, Chairperson. Reference to the question raised by Honorable Member, it was possible, as my colleague just said, we should stop at the first sentence. Because the prescription that has been made here is a minimal prescription. It is not a maximum, which says post-bank can only do this. Overboard, it cannot. But because we preempted the discussions of this meeting, we knew if we didn't list this, you're going to say, give us a minimum. But now we're giving you a minimum to say, allow this company on day-to-day basis able to operate. Chairperson, it's very important when we discuss this clause 9, link it to clause 2. Because you are saying the vision that you are setting here is to achieve the following. You gave a very good vision, but the vision should be aligned to the power that the company should have. So from our side, Chairperson, there's nothing wrong. We may not prescribe, as my colleague from Portland just said, but the prescription here was found on the basis that there must be other activities as a company that might want to raise funds, can be joint ventures, if they want to raise joint ventures, they would like as a company. So the difficulty that the members are having here, it takes us back to say let us not decide this minimal power and leave it open-ended. We'll be happy to do that because we don't want, as soon as we challenge these powers, honorable members, you are saying the company remain what you are now. There will be no need to have this bill passed. Because the current state that is supposed to do is uplift the standard of this company as outlined in the white paper. There are stages set in the policy vision of the white paper to say this company corporate is a financial entity.
There's nothing new here. So this is what I have to say. Let us begin to address this clause 9, reference clause 2 of the bill. Thank you so much. Ms. Vukela, my talk now.
This national treasury disrupting everything here at the moment.
I'll also before my colleague.
Okay. Who is this? Mandisa?
Yes, Mandisa. on the issue. Chairperson, I just thought it is important that we highlight to the honourable members that once the bank is established, we do have other oversight mechanisms, and I just want to address the issues around the investments in money, the guarantees that we have on the state, because the regulations of the bank on their own require very close monitoring of the investment funds that will be put within the bank. So on top of this act, there will be regulations and the oversight that we'll have from the oversight mechanisms that are going to ensure that the issues that the honourable members are worried about are taken into consideration in terms of the issues that we have. The application of PFMA would still get into the issues of, would still apply as it is indicated in clause 24, that the PFMA still applies. However, as a bank, and we are needing to do and be able to do our work much more efficiently, we are going to require to be able to take into consideration all the issues that have been raised. I do concur with Mr. Vukela that, yes, it could end at Section 2. Clause number 9 would end at Section 2. And all those were just explanations about exactly what are the operational activities on a day-to-day basis that this company would have to get involved in. And I just thought that it would be, I'm not quite sure if Mandisa would want to add anything on that issue.
Patricia?
Chairperson, first of all, somebody said earlier on that the full power of the bank will appear in the license condition. So all of the issues listed here in 9 will be part of the license condition. Now, relating to clause 9F, the conclude joint ventures, what I understand you to say that the PMFA, there's no provision there that will allow you to enter into joint venture. Now, I still think that we need
to
conclude joint ventures and other commercial third parties. Somebody earlier on said that the PFMA exclude joint ventures.
No,
who said exclude? That's where the PMFA debate comes in. It was raised by one of you to say that the reason why you put this in there is because the PMFA exclude that provision and F.
Honourable Member, I think you said that you may have erred, but in the PFMA and the issues around the federal regulations, it's very clear on the issues of gender.
So you're definitely changing. I've written it down here, and Ms. Killian has also raised the issue. No, there's nothing with my ears. I sat for 2 weeks in the day and see let me to
that explains the damage to the ears.
What I want to propose, Chairperson, is that on my understanding that the PFMA exclude that, Since there is going to be this agreement by the Minister of Finance and the Minister and the Post Office, will there be consultation with the Minister of Finance when you conclude any joint ventures? Because of the risk, you know, we're dealing with public money. It's mandatory, it will be there. Okay. Now,
right, are we satisfied now? I want to move off the side.
Yeah, no, just to say, I happen to be part of the team that formed the PIC when I was a select treasurer. That's the very same route that we followed. That's the reason why I'm getting slightly frustrated. Because if you look at how the PIC was structured, it was even more complex than this thing that is quite well defined. To say, what is this public investment company going to be doing? And we went through the very same route, you'd imagine. But you look at how the PIC has grown. You know, even the building that we are residing in, the DOC, we are renting it from the PIC. You'd imagine when we started, it must have been a very open process. You say, where are they going to start? Where are they going to end? But it is a revenue for the government to subsidize the taxpayers. Because the taxes that we are paying are not sufficient to run this country. We have to have investment somewhere so that we are able to subsidize running the country. So I'm saying in a nutshell, if you look at how the PIC was cited, and this thing that is well defined, it means this portfolio committee has set for another 5 years, debating each line and line and each on the investment.
Patricia, if it's any comfort to you, I also heard the official saying that exactly that you heard.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with charges. No, you're right. I also heard it. Right. Section 10. Setting up of a board. Chapter 4. Clear? Right. 11. Functions of the board. Now you must read carefully now, eh?
Authority. I just wanted to confirm that. Okay.
No, they must answer. They must know.
Just to honourable member, whether the board would be the accounting authority? Yes, it is under Section 11.
Okay. Mr. Dikari, you want to raise what is this explanation called 11, Q14?
I mentioned that it's consistent with Section 49 of the PHMAG Act, which stipulates that where there's a board in a public entity, the board is normally the accounting authority. But then the Kingsley report also alludes to difficulty with big boards and who is then criminally liable if there is no if there's a contravention of certain provisions. And I just kind of flagged this because this committee has had experience with the SABC board. So I just thought maybe the committee wanted to pause and just think about size versus the accounting authority issue.
In the response by the DOC to Kosaki's submission on the post bank bill, you defined corporatization as the transformation of state assets or agencies into state-owned corporations in order to introduce corporate management techniques to their administration. So what I understood that to mean was that it was a transformation from simply an entity into a functioning, envisaging profit and or sort of sustainability, like state-owned enterprise. And the tradition in the case of a state-owned enterprise, not tradition, but what seems to me from government that best practice has been for state-owned entities to be far more independent than clause, than Section 10 and Section 11 envisage. We have the same redundancy coming up that was in Section 9, in Section 10, where the members of the board are appointed or reappointed by the minister, with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance and the Post Office, the majority shareholder of which is the minister. I'm interested to hear from DOC why the minister, why it envisages the minister being so intimately involved, if this is an attempt to turn this entity into a state-owned enterprise in the vein of a Transnet or an ESCOM or an SABC. Why corporatize if the department is just going to run it? And the same goes to Section 11, B&E. The board must notify the minister immediately of any matter that may prevent or materially affect the achievement of the object, must generally refer to the minister any matters that may adversely affect the functioning of the company. And then I'd like to reiterate our legal advisor's concern about the size of the board. Not more than 15 members, the majority of whom must be non-executive. It's very leeway-ish, not clear, and it is quite big. And the extent to which best practice is being, if the minister decides to have a board of, 15, if he decides to use all 15 members, how do we analyze whether this is best practice? And how do we as a committee oversee this if so much control is vested in the minister and in the DOC? So if you could just clarify that.
Jillian?
Just an extra question. The size of the board. Why would...
Okay, can we have a response to the issues raised by the our parliamentary legal advisor and Ms. Mandy Brooke?
Okay, it's difficult for me to narrow down exactly what the question was, but yes, you're corporatizing. To me, that doesn't mean you're creating an institutional company so independent that it's completely independent of the executive. It certainly can't mean that. It does mean, yes, you're creating a corporate entity. It does also mean you create that entity under a specific ministry, right? And as an SOE. So certainly that must be in line with the PFMA, where the minister must have some form of oversight role in this SOE. So I certainly must upfront say I don't see any role for the executive as being a threatening role, but rather a value-added role to strengthen, for example, improved governance. Whereas you could leave things just to the company to carry on its own, you build in an extra level of approval where a role is then anticipated for the minister. The other questions you'll just have to rephrase again, please, Chair.
What is the gist of my question? Why bother corporatizing? If the desire is to retain all, to me, what seems like all the qualities of a company entity, rather than a separate enterprise with corporate management administration, which is how you describe the difference.
I think, Chair, my colleagues will better answer that, but it goes then back to the initial main question, which was why do you need this whole bill, why do you need a corporatized entity, and so on. I think that was discussed at the previous meeting. I recall some of these being you're trying to ring-fence, for example, the funds. There are other issues similar to that I think was already exhausted, but if my colleagues wish to just repeat those in your discretion, Chair.
Anybody want to help us?
can I just, I mean, I'm from my understanding, I'm talking now as a board member of the South African Post Office. The conception of corporatization of the Post Bank draws from the commercialization, I mean, it's from the Post Office moving from becoming a bureaucratic government department with the departments of post and telecommunications. So the mandate draws from the beginning of commercialization, which basically corporatization in terms of the definition that was provided earlier was about the establishing a corporate entity with the improvement in effectiveness and efficiency of the corporate. So basically it's a strategic approach that is part of the objective of basically transforming the state at a higher level, and particularly in terms of the post office and its entity. So this forms part of that trajectory from where we sit. So it's not just a now issue in terms of, it's basically an overall strategy which basically deals with the transformation of the post office, and particularly this entity at this point, which is the post bank.
Okay. Thanks, Chen. To add on what the board members just said, if you want to establish a bank, you must first establish a legal person. You must first cover time. Here we talk about post office, which post bank is a division. So unless otherwise, Honorable Member Mazibuko does not want this company to become a bank. Because the essence of this scenario is that you must first corporatize, establish a legal person. When that person is established, he's able to go and apply for a license. Hence, the condition of a banking will form part of the license. Here, you are just establishing an entity. The same way you've done when you corporatized post office in 1991. From 1950 establishment is the same process. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Langa. Welcome.
I apologize. I actually want to ask a more question to the other side, because my experience of the sector, communication sector, is that in the last 15 years we've not drawn a very clear line between where the functions of government lie and where those of the others should begin. In fact, it is my view that we've bent the stick too far the other way towards the side of the corporate. You look at ICASA, you look at Centec, you look at the SABC board. The big problem is that, in my view, that in all these boards who exist from little group of people, say 5, 6, 7, maybe 12, that they become policy makers in that area. So it's not government that necessarily is a policy maker, and then these structures exist and execute the policies, and then are totally independent when they execute those policies. But they set, in most instances, set the policy and they implement. If you look at ICASA as a prime example, if you look at Centec as a prime, probably Centec is the closest to the example of the post bank. Where you then get people who decide they're not just going to be a post bank, they then become a this and a that, and they start into other areas. Now, my question is, we've raised this now for at least, I've been in this committee at least for a year and a half now, we keep raising this issue. But it seems that even when we actually conceptualizing these issues, that we still do not give government the policy-making function in these areas. So that we, if we check something, you see, that is why our hands are tied as a committee. Because if you give the policy-making plus the implementation to institutions, there's very little we can do other than fight. You fight with them because they really wanted to. You found them and wanted, they tell us, but why are you interfering with us? You've given us the right to make policy. Now, I have a huge problem here, and we've kept on raising this, that the policy that is made is not set by government. government is the elected representative of the people, not seven board members on some board or the other, who then decide, in Centec case, decide where signals, who signals, how signals, and et cetera, et cetera. So my question really is that why is it that we exclude, unless I'm reading this bill incorrectly, exclude government from laying down the policy for the post bank, and then, of course, leaving the independence, totally independent, with the execution of that, with the functionalizing of that. And may I just respond on the corporatization here? I mean, the practice, as I understand it, all over the world, is when government has made a policy decision to get involved in something and a service delivery which is business oriented, like the post bank or fintech, then clearly you do it in the way that we're doing. You do it by way of a corporatization with the shareholder being government. Unless there are other models that work better, which I'll be happy to listen to, because I think some of these models we have do not necessarily work the best. But that would be, for me, the answer to corporatization. Once you've made a policy decision as government, it would be totally wrong for us as parliamentarians or as members of parliament to sit on the boards of these structures and so on. It just can't. And therefore, you have to corporatize. But then the issue is the one that I'm raising, is where do you draw the line on policy formulation and then independence of executing that policy? And that is really my worry I have. It seems that if you're going to look at the philosophy that underlines this department's work, is that we bent the stick, in my view, other people would disagree, we bent the stick too far the other way, that policy is not made by government and it's always made by a few individuals in this area of communication. I'm sorry for the long question, but I really think it's something that in this bill we should start grappling with, because if we want to give direction on it, it should be here. And then we need to look at those that exist, how we fix it up. So thank you, Chair, and I'm sorry again that I'm late.
Yeah, but I heard Lindy, she wants less of a role for any minister in this matter. Wherever she sees minister, I can see her horns go up, and her ears go up. Like, why are we giving so much power to the minister? So we do have an ideological divide here. Let's accept that. But look, it's a new issue that Member De Lange is raising. It's a matter that has come up with all of these entities that we deal with. I don't know if there's an immediate response. Do you want to think about it and maybe come back with a... No, Mr. Bukela? You're saying it's a policy matter for us to decide. What are you saying?
No, I didn't say that.
Okay. I saw you shaking his head again.
No. My shaking of head was the fact that we are receiving two contracting views. One from Honorable Member Mazibuko. One from Honorable Member Delange. So we must narrow these two views together. I was taking hand because the same committee is talking on two languages. So the masters are speaking on the same language. So when we leave this room, whether we take the view raised by Member Mazibuko as a spirit or the view raised by Member De Lange as a spirit. Hence, I shook my head. Perhaps when we move forward, we can be defined who's government and what is government. Because government is a broad context. Thank you, Chairperson.
Mr. Kulwani?
No, I was saying that you see, if you have listened why I was talking about the 2A, that 2, so remember that clause 2, which we're talking about, is precisely to deal with this thing, just that people maybe could not understand at that time. To precisely deal with this thing in terms of when you talk about concurrence, you see, that's the issue that I was saying. Sometimes you frustrate even the people who are appointed as the board who are running the company to their seat. So what Comrade Dilane is raising is precisely that you need that separation or that leeway that people must be able to function back under the broader framework by government and so on. So that's why I was talking about that today. Mm-hmm. Precisely around those particular issues.
Yeah, so I can clarify. I agree in principle with what Honorable Delana has said about the difference between
okay.
about the difference between government driving policy and government running the show. But to me, clause 10 and 11 are about government running the show. And so if government is actually going to dictate, not dictate, if government is going to lay down a broad policy framework for how this bank is going to function, it shouldn't need to then at the delivery side also intervene in the functioning of the board. The board should then be able to do its work independently, having been given that mandate. But to me, 10 and 11 are opening doors for the executive, which is also the majority shareholder, and the shareholder of the majority shareholder, to get involved in the running of the board, in the functioning of the board and the running of the bank. So for me, I don't see a problem with separating the two functions, but then surely the board must be allowed to go ahead independently and do its job without always having to turn to or be brought to heel by the minister, who is also responsible for laying out the policy terms.
Why is this thing with the honourable member is talking about? This thing of what is he talking about, that the department is what is talking about, that they must run to the minister and so on. Where is it? Specific clause, which way is talking about
11,
that?
11 D and E.
D is saying must notify the minister immediately of any matter that may prevent or material affect the achievement of the object or financial target of the company. And E generally must refer to the minister any matter that may adversely affect the functioning of the company. How does it link with the statement which the member is uttering? That might be some reason. Because here it's saying to safeguard the interest of the public or the public man. If there is a reflex that this is going to happen, to notify the minister that, hey, we are facing a problem, because this is public money, funding. So that you don't collapse and then later the department or the minister comes in. That's why I'm saying I don't read it here. Maybe I'm reading the English wrong.
It's to inform the minister of risk that might be there. That's really what it is. So you're putting a legal duty on the board to inform the government of risks that might be faced, that the bank might be facing.
That's
okay. Right. Now, can I just check before we come on this particular matter or something else?
I was just browsing through this comment by the Treasury.
Okay.
And I wanted to know how this is going to be worked in while we are considering the bill informally. Because, you know, if I just, the reason I'm raising my hand is that the Treasury proposed that the clause of borrowing money be rephrased to be within the framework of the PMFA and with prior approval of the Minister of Finance and Communication. So I think it's important information, and I just want to get your guidance, Chairperson, on how we can work this into us discussing the bill informally this morning.
Look, I thought I would get someone from National Treasury to come and talk to us about these provisions, but the gentleman who came in here said that all the legal people are in Pretoria. So they just sent this document to us, because I insisted that if we don't have it now in this process, it becomes very difficult next week to start looking at things afresh. So I want to suggest later on, when we have a short stretch break, for us to spend some time just perusing this document so that we familiarize ourselves, as you've pointed out. But unfortunately, there's nobody here to talk to the document. I thought it was going to be a page or two, but now it's quite a lengthy document, and it's quite a detailed document. So I was asking this gentleman, can't you get someone to present? And he says, no, there's nobody around. So we will have to we distributed the document. We will have to see how we incorporate some of the ideas there. Can we just complete this thing on 10 and 11? Is it possible to have one clause inserted somewhere in this, which talks about the policy-making role of the minister, the broad policy-making, what's the word, policy directive or policy-making? Policy directive or policy framework. Framework. Directive is more operational. So it's a policy framework responsibility of the minister. And then we can see where we would insert it. But it will have to be probably before you put out the functions of the board and those things, so that you give the minister an overarching role in terms of the policy framework and the board functions within that framework. Okay, so you will craft something for us, and then we will work through that. All right, can we, Patricia, before we, can we just finish? But it's a long section, eh? So it's an important section. Okay, Theo?
Maybe to also look at this in a different approach, because I think the comments that are being raised are valid and important that we need to look into, is that probably, and I'll ask the head of legal to help me with the issues, that when we do look at the section that we have just for, in fact, the full chapter 4, let me just say, the full chapter 4 as it stands in the control and management of the company, the policy framework that the chair has referred to would probably be assisting, but let us look at it from a point of saying this would be an issue. Remember, we are trying to establish a company that we are going to register as a bank. The establishment of that company is going to require the establishment of that board to be able to enable us to go and register a bank. That we look at it from a perspective of the establishment of the first board that will then go and register a bank. Under the Banks Act, there are very clear stipulations on how the boards of banks are to be put together and how they are going to be managed. And those are also included within the articles of association that will then be drafted between that bank and the company, the company that will be holding it. So I just wanted to say there's an alternative in the way that we could look at the chapter 4 issues in terms of making sure that we deal with it from that perspective. And probably that's one way that we could address it.
You want to say something, Patricia? Yeah, that's the time we're
going to do. I was saying to... No, we had some other logical debate earlier on, and I had threatening that if he doesn't support ownership, I'll report him to the FACP because it's... So, the last point here, person, is that on chapter 4, if we want to go according to the existing regulations of banking and the Banking Act, is it then necessary to repeat it in the post bank if it's going to be exactly like the way other banks is going to be regulated? That's my question. Must it be repeated again?
Mendisa?
This was an extensive debate in the working committee, and I think from our initial submission was that the banking framework in the country and worldwide has a very stringent government framework. And my understanding is that it is going to be made even more stringent given the financial crisis that the banks have contributed to. And it is going to be a problem in that we also are facing some fundamental changes in legislation. And in the event that this is contrary to the main framework, which is the bank framework, there also is going to be a problem. We would be comfortable with its exclusion term. And normally, as the CEO has indicated, it is usually part of the articles of association, because in the event that there are changes that necessitate a change, it would actually mean a change in legislation, which other companies are not faced with. Other companies, when they need to change their composition of the board to be in line with whatever regulatory framework is there, all they have to do is to change their articles and not change legislation. The position that the post bank will be in is to not only try to comply, but to also work on a change in legislation.
I'm worried that the last two answers from that side who dealt with this
funding. See, if we make a policy issue around policy making, then you don't say that we stick to everything the banking laws do and so on. You then adapt the law according to what will flow from that policy decision. You see, I mean, there are many ways to play a cat. One way of doing it is to do it this very long way we're doing it on this boat. To create a bank for government. That's one way of doing it, and then we've done it in a cumbersome way. The other way is to do it, you still allow everything that applies to the bank, particularly the protections and the risk factors to apply, but you draft it in such a way, as you've done here. You see, you've done here, you say the board will be composed of this and this. Now, usually that's all in the Banking Act. You've now changed what's in the Banking Act. So we mustn't for some things say, no, you can't change the Banking Act, and for others say, no, you can change the Banking Act. You see, what it is we must make a policy. You see, my worry is this. You saw the banks all over the world have just collapsed. Now, what happens if we open a bank and all our people start banking in this bank and it collapses? This bank has a special responsibility more than any other bank because we, the government, are the shareholders. So we have to create an entity in such a way that we make sure that government, make sure that you have the protections of a bank, but government minimizes the risk on the system. You can't run a bank thinking that, okay, government will always bail us out. I mean, can you imagine? You see, that I'm not saying you're saying that. What I'm saying is we have to be careful when we draft the law that that's not the effect of it. Because if we draft it in the way we have, where government has got no role in it, it's got nothing to do with policy, and we're just creating a bank for government that's going to be run by a few individuals, without government being able to say, for example, you will not loan money to this kind of entity. As a policy, you will loan money for ordinary people to buy houses, the kind of things government would want to do. But when you start loaning money to dubious businessmen for millions and billions and billions of rand, and government will have to pick up the bill if the thing collapses, clearly we're going to have to draft something that's more balanced. And that's what I'm saying. So when the CEO says, no, but we must go and look at the bank, it's got all the things, and it'll be in the articles, that's not good enough. That's not good as far as I'm concerned. So we're going to have to draft something. I've got no problem with doing it this way. To say, we want the board to look at this and this, and then to say, this of the Banking Act will apply to it. You know, so you say section so-and-so will apply to that. And then it's a hybrid that you're creating, plus the policy issues that are balanced from government side, so that we try and make that equalization of the risk. I mean, when I read the bill, we're only creating a bank within government by setting out its structures, but letting everything that's important about banking still apply to it. And I'm saying that I think the balance is wrong. And that we need to create protections. We cannot let a few individuals go and make policies and decide to spend money in a bank and how they're going to loan the money, which they did in America, by the way. That's what they did. They had a certain policy around micro-lending. They made it up, and they created the collapse all over the world. Now, we as government should be able to set policy for this bank, which is a government bank, that will not allow certain things, which is more than just being another bank. It has to be. It can't. I mean, government cannot be irresponsible as far as this goes. It has to set those things. So I think we must be careful. And therefore, if we then have to amend these things, once we've made a policy decision, I'm sure our chair will be discussing it with the minister and so on, as far as the policy is concerned. But once we've done that, we probably then have to redraft to some extent how we see the rest of these things happening. We cannot just say, but the associations will apply, and the usual banking law will apply, and so that's not going to be good enough. I think that's going to create a huge risk for government when it creates a bank. So I just want us to be on the same line and the same frequency when we talk about it. I'm not criticizing the two of you, but I'm just saying the way that it's been structured, we may have to change that if we make the policy decision. that policy has to emanate from somewhere, and that bank must operate within that policy. To make that very clear. Thank you, sir.
Right, I think we are quite clear. We are on the same wavelength at the moment. Craft something for us, and we'll look at it. The policy making powers. Policy framework making powers of the minister. Okay? Yeah. Right, immediate comments about how we proceed with it, or do we just take them into account? Any views? Members? Not officials?
Jefferson, thank you for the opportunity that we could just go through the comments from the Treasury. It's becoming quite clear now to us that the content of this bill goes much broader than just post bank and communications. It overlaps with the banking provisions and all of that. I think the one suggestion here from the Treasury that says it is recommended that a conflict of laws clause be included in the bill to the effect that if there is any conflict between the bill and a provision of the applicable blank banking legislation, the provision applicable of banking legislation will take precedence. So actually meaning that we are taking a risk to design a bill which, unless checked out properly, could be in conflict with many laws and legislation governing banks. And therefore, I will suggest, propose, Chairperson, that we wait a little bit until the committee, the Finance Committee of Parliament, deal with a dedicated bank bill before them. And even if we could, as members of the committee, when they deal with that legislation, maybe also go and sit in and listen and see how, especially the objects of the dedicated banks. But to proceed with this as it is now, we're opening up ourselves for contradictions with so many parts of legislation, which I don't think I personally am not in a position to go and check this vis-a-vis the Banking Act or any of the banking regulations. We have waited how many years? 12 years? Can we wait another year or so to deal with this until we've completed the dedicated bank?
Thank you, Chair. I would like to concur with what Minister Patricia de Lille is saying. If there are any specific responses to the presentation made by Treasury, then comments could be made and we would listen to those. But I think the submission by Treasury actually reinforces some of the concerns that we have expressed as it refers to several issues, including the powers and functions of the bank, the role of the banking regulator, the role of all of it, and especially as far as the second tier legislation is that they made reference to when they made their first presentation to this committee.
So it would certainly be wrong for us to simply just proceed. We will have to have a proper, thorough intervention from Treasury to deal with their comments, to understand them. And then thereafter, we should take a decision as a committee that we probably should hold over the process to finalize this bill until such time as we have the necessary framework, legislative framework, to ensure that it complies. If we don't take that route, Chairperson, I fear that we will really place people at risk and also place government at risk in terms of the fiscal. So that is my first proposal, that we have comments, but that we then actually wait for a full presentation by Treasury and then thereafter take a formal decision. I believe at that stage we would all understand that it would be unwise to proceed with a bill before us. Thank you, Chair.
The legislation clearly envisages a bank, full bank, with all the frills, except that the major shareholder will be government. If you look at Treasury's comments, they have a completely different view. If you look at 2.1, it says, we support the initiatives of the bill to enable the post bank to provide the deposit-taking services in order to expand access to banking. 2.2. Fundamental principle that all deposit-taking institutions must be regulated by the banking regulator. That was not a general comment. And if you look at 2.21, which is probably the most telling clause that they've got, it says, the purpose of the post bank is to give effect to an internal restructuring of the post office by converting a division of the post office into a corporate entity. The business of the post bank will be to take deposits, provide facilities for money transfers and third-party payments. It's a very clear name. Then potentially, the business of the post bank might be expanded to include lending within specified limits. So their vision of it is that on the deposit side of things, clearly you need something, but then on the lending side, there clearly has to be very strict restrictions. If you look at the next clause, 2.22, provision is currently made in clause 4 of the Post Bank to license and operate as a bank. In respect of 4, it proposes the Post Bank should be regulated in terms of that act, establish a new type of dedicated bank, and so on and so forth and so forth. Now, it's very clear that the two departments have two completely different things in mind. Well, not completely different, but the one's got the expansive view, and the one's got a much more limited view. And clearly, with the expansive view came in the comments that some of us have made. For example, if you have an expansive view, then clearly it must be within a policy framework, etc. You can't just get it operating. And then if you go to the clause 2.36, it would be appropriate to include a provision that circumscribes the post bank's powers to lend. It could potentially be stipulated in provision, blah, 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 and you go on there. Now, I think for me, Chair, there's clearly a very important policy decision that arises. And the policy decision really is that once, do we have a complete bank, or do we have a bank in the limited, more limited scope as Treasury has decided? Once we get that, the policy decision sorted out, it doesn't just depend on this committee. Clearly we have to interact with both departments involved and so on. Then clearly we know what to do. It's very difficult to discuss the bill if we don't know whether that principle up. We've discussed it so far on the basis of the expansible, but already that will have to change substantially if we're going to have the expanded banking, because then you'll have to create all those checks and balances. So it seems to me, I mean, there's a lot of other things one can say in this document, but it seems to me that what is important for us is to give ourselves some space to interact. I think firstly we need space. I'm not sure if we should go at this stage as far as Mr. Law. We may in a while decide what she has suggested to leave it for a year or so. I think we must first give us space to consult and interact before we make that decision. I think the first issue is really to let Treasury come and sit here and interact to some extent also with the officials here, so we can hear whether we have two completely different views and what the implications of it are. And then from there on, it's clearly going to be necessary for particularly the chair to make certain interactions somewhere for us to make that policy decision. Either keep it as is or have the narrow focus, or keep it as is plus adding limitations and so on. So those would be my suggestions then, also to suggest that we have an interaction with Treasury and then not stop things, but let's amba gaatle and let's do the necessary consultation to see if we can get consensus around the policy decision that we need to take. Thank you. Chairman?
We must not degenerate into anarchy. I think the best thing, the point which you must start at is you have the institution which is called the National Treasury. You see, for me, Chair, this matter also affects how serious the National Treasurer is taking the committee. I realize I've got a problem. On the 23rd, we had a presentation from National Treasury. Official come and present before the committee. Although some of the issues which are here were in passing highlighted, like the issue of dedicated bank. But I'm saying, Chair, the point of departure is that firstly, I would agree that we need National Treasury so that we engage it in terms of this presentation. But I think, Chair, you should be able to write to them and indicate about their attitude and their behavior. Because what they've done, Chair, they've misled this committee. If you read their presentation that day, 23rd, and you read this presentation, it's actually different. And it's the same institution appearing before the Committee of Parliament. How serious are they taking us to this? I think there's a problem there, Chair, which we cannot just let it pass without being able to talk to that particular issue and so on. But the other issues, comrade, Chair, I agree with that to say, let us engage them, and they must be able to talk, to tell us about that presentation and this presentation, what they have bought from them, what exactly is going on there, which one is official. I think it will be important that whoever come and present must tell us which one is official. Because it will seem the officials there, they seem to be generating their own presentation and coming to that. But which one is signed out as an official presentation to the committee? Mandated so that the committee, as we engage, we understand clearly exactly what we're dealing with. We can't say work in this manner. I think there's a serious problem around this matter. But, Chair, the other issues, Chair, I would say maybe let us give ourselves time to engage National Treasury. At the point where we've engaged, it's when maybe we'll be able, as a committee, in my view, to be able to say how to move forward. We might not have to wait for a year. On their engagement, they might also engage us in terms of how possible we can move forward in passing this legislation in a manner which does not conflict with any other thing. But I think the legislation itself, Chair, is very important, so that we are able to unleash the potential of the bond bank to be able to perform their duties as well as an institution. But let us engage on that process, but react about the serious reservation about this National Treasury. Mm-hmm. That's why, anyway, those two hours are allergic when you see concurrence with the Minister of Treasury and so on. All the way, concurrence. What is this concurrence all about? You appoint a board concurrence, you do that concurrence. There's a problem with this concurrency. But anyway, I think that's how much.
Thank you, Chair.
All right. Any comments from the officials or legal people? I'm not saying it's a policy matter, which we must take a decision on. No views?
I think we respect the spirit of the portfolio committee, and we will fully agree with the honourable member Colin over what he has raised. Also, to note that our understanding as well was that at one point this committee would engage with the portfolio committee on finance as well around taking the bill further.
but be what it may, yeah, we initially had a problem with concurrence, quite frankly, because we didn't know what it meant, so it's going to take longer to make decisions, and financial decisions for that matter in the banking scenario, but we proceeded because we wanted to get the view of the committee, but it's, we'll then wait upon the committee to hear what it says. But that's the best we could have done as officials and ourselves as the post office to move a 12-year-old bill, to try and move it in 8 months. So, yeah, that's the way our energy is at. So we are at the mercy of the committee to tell us where do they want to see this process going further.
Okay, look, from what I can sense, I think that in principle, this bill is desirable. There's no objection to us actually moving forward on it. The key issue, from what I can understand, is really is the powers and the functions of the bank. We need absolute clarity from the principal, is both finance and the Minister of Communication. What kind of a bank are we talking about? Is it a full blank, as Mr. Delange is saying, or is it in this category of a dedicated bank with limited powers and limited functions? Ultimately, that's a decision that we're going to have to make at a political level. Okay, but, you know, I'm tempted to say, okay, we can hold that Section 9, maybe, because that's really where we might want to talk about this thing. But there are also other clauses that the Treasury is talking about that we will have to incorporate. Because depending on the decision you take, then you have to bring in the... They are saying all along the way you must bring in the Registrar of Banks and the Minister of Finance. Right? Now, you know, just from lawmaking, you also don't want concurrence with the Minister of Communication, Minister of Finance, Registrar of Banks. You'll consult as you did. If you can't get agreement, then the bank can't move. So I think these are important questions, that you need streamlined decision-making, but the safeguards must be built in. So I don't know if there's any merit in continuing with all the other things at this stage. I want to propose that we invite Treasury to come and present. I will write the letter that suggested them, indicating that they're giving us, in a sense, differing signals. Our signals are not too clear at this stage. But maybe what we should do is invite Treasury to take us through their presentation. They said that these are draft initial comments. So if they still want to engage with the state law advisor around drafting, that's also a matter of concern to us, because this bill is stable. And I think Treasury must understand that we can run with this thing ignoring everything they say. So if they want, they must do their homework. If they've got specific, you know, counter proposals to put forward for specific sections, they must put that on the table so that we can consider them. But in a sense, they're sort of taking us back to first principles. Really, that's what it is.
Yeah.
And that's not very helpful, because these things theoretically should have been cleared up and resolved in cabinet already.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But I think the sense I'm getting is that there are important issues that are still being raised by them, and that we need to really get them to put specific proposals on table so that we can consider them more seriously. So I will ask Treasury then to come with specific proposals, specific draft proposals by next week's meeting, to talk us through them rather than at a theoretical level. And then we can proceed. Okay, so next week will not be formal deliberations, will be still informal deliberations, but with something more considered from the side of National Treasury for us to chew on. Okay? It's not a problem. We will process this bill. I think we still have the intention of processing the bill. The one thing we might want to, that might hold us back a bit, is this dedicated bank bill. And we will have to try and check with the Finance Committee whether it has been tabled, whether they are busy with it, because if they're only going to deal with it later in the year, then it means we can process the bill to the point that we might have to wait till later, and then to see whether we can synchronize things and make sure that they talk to each other. But I don't want to draw that conclusion now. From our side, we want to process the bill as far as we can and as quickly as we can. Am I summarizing correctly? All right, then I think we can leave it at that. You are free to help yourself with what's left of the sandwiches. There's no lunch. And maybe there's cold coffee outside, I don't know. But we then meet each other on the debating floor, where blood will flow. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, the Dickie.